The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA. We are on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. In just a moment, we'll get an update on the sunken Tender Lone Star and its impact on the commercial fishery in the Nooshigak District. We'll also hear about a projection that this year's run will come in significantly below the preseason forecast. All of that and more on today's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. But first, here are the latest announcements from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon with an update for Igigik and Ugashik District commercial fishermen. The time of this announcement is 3 p.m. and the date is Saturday, July 6th. In Igigik, harvest from Friday's set gillnet only opener was 12,000 fish. Through July 5th, cumulative harvest is 4.2 million. Escapement on Friday was 19,000, and cumulative escapement is 790,000. The Igigik District commercial fishery will continue to stand down on July 7th. In Ugashik, escapement on Friday was 29,500. Cumulative escapement is 191,000. In-river indices dropped overnight. The Ugashik District will stand down on July 7th. Fishermen in both districts should stand by at 12 noon Sunday, July 7th, for the next possible announcement. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon with an update for commercial permit holders in the Neknek-Quejek District. The time is 12 noon and the date is Saturday, July 6th. The midnight to 6 a.m. sockeye estimate past the Neknek Tower was 1,000 for a cumulative escapement of 560,000. For the Quejek River, the midnight to 6 a.m. count was 15,000 for a cumulative escapement of 1.6 million, and the N River estimate is 100,000 sockeye. The Neknek-Quejek District will remain closed. The next update for the Neknek-Quejek District will be at 12 noon on Sunday, July 7th. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and King Salmon.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham with an announcement regarding commercial fishing in the Nooshigak District. This is Westside Salmon Announcement number 27, issued Friday, July 5 at 1 p.m. Effective immediately, the area within 6 statute miles of 58 degrees, 43.82 minutes north latitude, 158 degrees, 52.77 minutes west longitude is closed to all commercial fishing. Set gillnet fishing in the Igushik section is also closed effective immediately. As previously announced, commercial fishing with drift gillnets in the Nooshigak District opens at 3 p.m. until further notice. This has been the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Dillingham.
This is KDLG. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in just a moment. This is listener-supported public radio KDLG. You're tuned to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Mike Mason. The effort to cap the vents on the fuel tanks aboard the sunken Tender Lone Star was only partially successful Friday night. Tom Callahan of the Meredith Management Group is the incident commander for the owner of the Lone Star.
There is some residual sheening coming from the vessel. We saw a drop a second is coming up from the vessel, so it's leaving a discontinuous sheen about 500 yards downstream from the vessel, about a foot wide, discontinuous, dissipates, and it's a very light silver sheen. And this is less than the thickness of a human hair type of oil. So it's we're very encouraged, and they have some other follow-on operations planned to plug additional vents that are down in the mud, and we're hopeful that that'll be able to get to the point where it's completely buttoned up and have no further sheening from the vessel. That's the goal.
The responders are not certain of the type of petroleum product or products leaking from the Lone Star, but they intend to locate and plug all of the vents on the various fuel tanks on the Lone Star. Again, Tom Callahan, who flew into Dillingham today.
What they encountered when they did the dive operations last evening at Slack Water was the vessel is down on the starboard side, and the fuel vents and fills on that side are down in the clay, in the mud, so they couldn't gain access to them. So that's the intent, is tomorrow they've restaged and reconfigured how they will get down into the mud, pumping it out of the way so they can get to those vents and seal those as well.
The most immediate impact of the fuel coming out of the Lone Star is the closure of the commercial fishery in the area. The entire Igoochik section in the Nooshigak district is closed to set net fishing, and a large 6-mile closure has been instituted for the drifters around the mouth of the Igoochik River, which is the resting place for the Lone Star. ADF&G area management biologist Tim Sands says the closures will stay in place for the time being.
We're keeping what's closed closed until we're sure that there's no oil whatsoever coming from there and no oil remaining on the beaches. And so, in my estimation, you know, we would fly tomorrow at some point. If we heard that they plugged the vents, we'd fly tomorrow, and then we'd probably wait a whole another 24 hours and fly again and just make triple sure that it's shut down and there's nothing coming off. And then we'd have to still, you know, be on the lookout after that.
That means that the fishing closure impacting the Igoochik Beach set netters will likely stay in place for at least a couple of days, maybe longer. On Friday, Fish and Game received reports of oiled nets, which resulted in the immediate closure of fishing in the area. Sands doesn't know how much gear was actually impacted by the sheen coming off the Lone Star. He also confirms that he's received reports of petroleum products on some of the beaches in the area. Sands says the Department of Fish and Game has zero tolerance for fishing in areas impacted by the sheen coming off the Lone Star.
I need to be 100% confident that there's no chance whatsoever of anything being contaminated before we can open it up again.
Sands stressed that the commercial fishery closures won't be lifted until the open fuel vents on the Lone Star are plugged, and that effort is expected to happen sometime Sunday evening during the low tide. The federal on-scene coordinator's representative in Dillingham is Frank Sciano with the U.S. Coast Guard. He confirms that the efforts to use containment boom around the Lone Star earlier this week didn't work.
Initial response, which was the initial casualty, which was on the 30th of June, Coast Guard immediately reacted, and we contracted Chideau to get out here to do spill mitigation and to ensure any type of pollution cleanup if necessary. July 1st, when all equipment was being staged, there were attempts to boom the area off and to try to put some seclusion booming in some areas and some containment booming around the vessel. However, due to the 8 knots, no seclusion booming was tried, and then the containment booming that was put on failed, and the next morning we indicated that we just couldn't control that type of current. The entrainment's just too strong.
It's believed that the Lone Star is carrying over 13.7 thousand gallons of diesel fuel and about 300 gallons of other petroleum products, and the vessel sitting in the mouth of one of the major salmon-producing rivers in Bristol Bay. Sciano revealed that even though the responders don't think the fuel that's causing the sheen is recoverable, they've been trying.
We want to make every effort possible, so even though it didn't look recoverable, we still wanted to get people on scene and stage some equipment and at least try. Just like we tried the containment booming, we did feel that that was not going to work, but we wanted to give it an effort anyway. So we did that as well yesterday. We still have Chideau on scene, and they're going to still be on scene today and tonight. We are having equipment staged in that area with immediate response within 20, 30 minutes of anything that does occur if unfortunate events happen.
Sciano confirms that so far the efforts to use skimming equipment have not been successful. The Lone Star is sitting on its starboard side, and Sciano confirms a portion of the vessel can be seen above the waterline during the low tide. However, he says the location of the vessel makes it a very challenging place to respond to.
I've been in Alaska for almost 4 years now, and I've handled quite a few spills. This has been the first time that logistically we've just had such complications with keeping equipment in the field. The current itself is quite strong, and nothing you could put in there would do any good. And at the same time, our actual equipment that's needed to stage is so far away. For example, Dan McGowan Services has contracted their tugboat out in Adak, which is making its way over now. We just did not have the equipment here necessary at the time. There's been quite a many spills lately, and it's expanded the equipment from all OSROs and salvage operators.
Currently, the response vessel Western Viking and the tug Double Eagle are expected to make it to Dillingham from Dutch Harbor somewhere in the middle of next week, which means the lightering effort to get the fuel off the Lone Star will have to wait a few more days. Incident Commander Tom Callahan says the assets from Dutch Harbor will be used in both the lightering effort and in the effort to remove the Lone Star from its current location.
What they're going to do is bring the barge alongside the wreck, and the intent is to pipe into the fuel tanks and drain, pump the oil out of the tanks and backfill it with water, and then the work on righting the vessels. The finer points of that are what's being worked out. As they go down and dive on it, they learn more about the condition and the situation of the vessel, and that helps drive the exact details of their operation.
Both Callahan and Shiano confirm that the goal is to get the fuel off the Lone Star as soon as possible. Shiano hopes that the lightering operation won't impact commercial fishing if and when the current closures are lifted.
And during lightering operations, we don't see a big impact with the fisheries. We do have all the OSROs and equipment. The pollution response equipment is going to be staged. We're going to have licensed crew, inspected vessels and barges. It's going to be a very robust team out there. So we're trying to do as big and as great as possible to keep the fishing open while doing lightering operations.
The Lone Star sank in the mouth of the Agouchik River last Sunday, and it took until Friday night to plug any of the vents on the vessel's fuel tanks. Many stakeholders in the commercial fishery have lamented the lack of progress during the first few days of the response effort. Those concerns are shared by Incident Commander Tom Callahan. He admits that logistics slowed the response.
Things were hit and plans put in motion, equipment put in motion as soon as this occurred. And so Frank and I would have liked to have seen this done yesterday, several days ago. So it's frustrating working through, but would like to let everyone know that the best efforts are being made to get the right equipment, the right people, and the right plans in place to address this just as quickly as is humanly possible.
Tom Callahan is the incident commander for the owner of the Lone Star, Charles Burris. Callahan works for the Meredith Management Group, and he confirms that a special claims hotline has been established for fishermen affected by the closures and the spills related to the sinking of the Lone Star. The claims hotline is 610-725-8286. Once again, 610-725-8286. And once again, some of the fuel vents on the vessel have been plugged. They will try to plug additional vents on Sunday. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. You're listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The Bristol Bay commercial sockeye fishery appears to be dwindling fast, as only 136,000 sockeye were taken Friday across the entire bay. Despite being open to continuous fishing, only 100,000 sockeye were taken Friday in the Nooshigak District to push the season total to over 2.7 million. The Naknek-Wejack District was closed Friday, so the district total is still just over 4 million. There was just an 8-hour set-net period Friday in the Igigik District, and just 12,000 sockeye were taken. Season total in the Igigik District is still 4.1 million sockeye. The Ugashik District was closed Friday. Season total is still 1.8 million fish. Friday's commercial harvest in the Togiak District was 24,000 sockeye to push the district total to 90,700 fish. The total harvest in Bristol Bay through Friday was just over 13 million sockeye. That's still about 3.6 million fish short of the preseason forecast. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game reports that on average there were 270 sockeye per drift delivery Friday in the Nooshigak District, and the number in the Togiak District was 208. As of 9 a.m. this morning, there were 1,337 drift net vessels registered to fish in Bristol Bay. The count in the Naknek-Quijack District was 533. That's expected to increase up to 550 in 48 hours. Currently, there are 127 D-boats registered to fish in the Naknek-Quijack District. That's expected to increase by 4 vessels in 48 hours. Current vessel count in the Igigik District is 303. That's expected to increase to 306 vessels in 48 hours. And currently, there are 75 D-boats registered to fish in Igigik. The vessel count in the Nooshigak District is 269. That's expected to increase to 278 in 48 hours. And currently, there are 48 D-boats registered in the Nooshigak District. The vessel count in the Ugashik District is 174. That's expected to increase up to 182 in 48 hours. Currently, there are 45 D-boats registered to fish in the Ugashik District. Now, looking at escapement, another 29.4 thousand sockeye were counted Friday in the Ugashik River to push the season total to 190.5 thousand. That's still well short of the escapement goal of 500,000 to 1.2 million. However, Fish and Game's estimating there are another 80,000 sockeye in the Ugashik River that have not yet been counted as escapement. Friday's escapement count to the Igigik River was 19.4 thousand. Season total is now 790.6 thousand sockeye. That's approaching the lower end of the escapement goal of 800,000 to 1.4 million. Fish and Game's estimating there are another 20,000 sockeye in the Igigik River that have not yet been counted as escapement. Sockeye escapement to the Quijack River was counted at 86.3 thousand sockeye on Friday to push the total to 1.5 million. Fish and Game's estimating there are another 100,000 sockeye in the Quijack River that have not yet been counted as escapement. And another 13.8 thousand sockeye were counted in the Naknek River Friday. Season total is now 561.3 thousand. That's still well short of the escapement goal of 800,000 to 1.4 million. Sockeye escapement to the Agushik River was counted at 29,000 fish to push the total to 254.2 thousand. Nooshigak River's sockeye escapement was counted at 33.5 thousand fish Friday, pushing the total to 819.1 thousand. Wood River escapement was counted at 39.7 thousand sockeye to push the total to just over 1 million. And another 4.1 thousand sockeye were counted Friday to the Togiak River. Season total there is now 14.8 thousand. Now, looking at the gear splits, in the Ugashik District, the split is 95% drift, 4.8% set. In the Igigik District, the split is 85.5% drift, 14.5% set. In the Naknek-Quijack District, the split is 82.8% drift, 8.6% Naknek set, and 8.5% Quijack set. And in the Nooshigak District, the split is 78.4% drift, 16.2% Nooshigak set, and 5.4% Igushik set. The total run to Bristol Bay through Friday is 18.4 million sockeye, including the harvest, escapement, and the in-river estimates. That's still well short of the preseason forecast of a run of 26.3 million. The daily run summary can be found on the ADF&G Bristol Bay website. Summaries are posted on the Fish and Game offices in Dillingham and King Salmon. And catches as part of the Port Moeller test fishery have been quite low the past few days, as the test fishery may be shut down a few days early. Scott Rayburn is the data analyst for the Bristol Bay Science and Research Institute, and in the interpretation that was issued Thursday evening, he noted that combining the projections for the inshore districts puts the total run forecast at 22.2 million sockeye. That's about 4 million fish short of the preseason forecast of 26.3 million that was put forward by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Rayburn says the lower forecast is based on figuring out the travel time for sockeye between the Port Moeller test fishery and the inshore districts. That travel time is between 6 to 9 days.
When you know that parameter, then you can figure out the fish for index and sort of project what's going to happen in each district. And when you add all those up, it tends to provide a better forecast for the total run, because you'll be over on one district, under on another, and errors cancel out and so forth. And while each, you may see a little bit more error around each district-specific projection, the total run forecast should be a little better.
In the interpretation of the Port Moeller catches that was issued Thursday, Rayburn noted that it appears that the sockeye runs to the Ugashik and Igigik districts are close to being over. He noted that the Nooshigak and Quijack districts are finishing their peaks. It's not uncommon for the inshore catches to remain fairly steady after the peak as fishermen catch sockeye coming in on the tail end of the run. Rayburn says there does not appear much to be much of a tail to the 2013 run. The Port Muller test fishery got started on June the 10th and was scheduled to run through July 10th. However, it looks like the fishery may be wrapped up early due to low catches. By all accounts, the 2013 sockeye run to Bristol Bay is the earliest ever recorded. Rayburn agrees.
Usually a run at Bristol Bay run is a day or two early or a day or two late. Every now and then it'll be 3 days. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it seems like 1 or 2 years may have been 4 days early. But this run may be 6, 7 days early.
You can find the updates from the Port Muller test fishery online on the website of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association at bbrsda.com. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue in a moment. This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. A Kipnuk man has died from a fire on a fishing boat docked in Igigik. Troopers report that responders found the body, believed to be that of 56-year-old Harburg Paul, very early Thursday morning. Beth Epson is a spokesperson for the state troopers.
At 3:15, some other fishermen saw some smoke coming out of the Pauline too, and then at 3:30, about 3:30, they saw flames coming out of the boat. So some first responders, including people from other boats and people from the cannery, managed to pull Joe Paul and Paul Paul out of the boat. But unfortunately, there was another brother that perished in the fire.
Harburg Paul was pulled from the boat around 4:30 in the morning and was pronounced dead in Igigik. The three brothers are fishermen from Kipnuk, according to Ibsen.
Joe and Paul were flown out of Igigik. We're not sure if they were flown to Anchorage or Seattle for treatment of their burns. Unfortunately, Harburg, he was pronounced deceased at the clinic. His body has been flown to Anchorage for an autopsy. Some of the burns that Joe and Paul suffered were from when they were trying to get back into the boat to get their brother.
The 32-foot drift net vessel Pauline II was moored at the AGS Seafoods dock. First responders of nearby fishermen and cannery workers put out the fire and they kept the flames from spreading to nearby boats, according to Ibsen.
They were instrumental in preventing the flames from spreading to other boats moored next to the Pauline II.
Due to bad weather, state troopers were unable to respond. Instead, a wildlife trooper that was in the area for commercial fisheries enforcement traveled by skiff to the Igigik area to start the investigation. A deputy fire marshal flew from Anchorage to the village to conduct an investigation into the cause of the fire. Foul play is not suspected. And Alaska General Seafoods has released a statement about Thursday morning's tragedy. Mac Keplinger is the general manager for the AGS facility in Igigik.
Alaska General Seafoods employees and fishermen are saddened by the tragic boat fire that occurred at our dock in Igigik during the early morning hours of July 4th. The fire began in the cabin of the fishing vessel Pauline II at around 4 a.m. Fishermen on adjoining boats quickly roused the fleet and together with the AGS crew were able to contain the fire and eventually put it out. The heroes were the individuals that risked their lives to assist the Paul brothers from Kipnuk out of the cabin and up the ladder to safety. Joe Paul and Paul Paul received third-degree burns to their hands and were flown to Anchorage for treatment. Sadly, their brother, Harburg Paul, died at the scene of smoke inhalation. We'd like to acknowledge the quick response and care provided to the victims by the staff of the Igigik Village Tribal Clinic, the efforts of the AGS fishing fleet and employees saved the adjoining boats, docks, and lives of two men who are loved and respected by this close-knit fishing community. The loss of Harburg will be felt by all of us, and he will be forever remembered for his love of family, friends, fishing, and his contagious smile. The accident is currently under investigation by the Office of the Fire Marshal, the Alaska State Troopers, and the United States Coast Guard.
The cause of Thursday's fire is still unknown. The Pauline II is considered a total loss. And another fishing vessel in Bristol Bay caught fire on the 4th of July and was lost as well. All three on board were rescued and were reported to be uninjured. The 32-foot Captain K, skippered by Ron Johnson from Dillingham, was about 5 nautical miles east of the tender Lone Star near the mouth of the Agushik River when it caught fire around 12 midnight on the 4th. The fire may have been caused by an exhaust malfunction. The three people on board were rescued by a Good Samaritan vessel nearby following a distress call. The vessel was lost. About 300 gallons of diesel fuel were thought to be on board. And a Dillingham man, Joey J. Paul, died on Thursday after falling into the engine shaft area while fishing near Chignik Lagoon.
Basically, it's the engine shaft in the boat. He fell basically about 5 feet onto the shaft in the engine.
Beth Ipson is a spokesperson for the state troopers. She says crew members retrieved Paul from where he fell. She says Paul was working on the 38-foot fishing vessel Aleut Sisters. Paul was transported to the Chignik Lagoon Medical Center, where he was pronounced deceased. The state medical examiner's office was contacted, and an autopsy was requested. Next of kin has been notified. No foul play is suspected. OSHA has been contacted, and they will be looking into the incident. The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report will continue coming up in just a moment.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, 1-800-816-3741.
Listening to KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm your host, Mike Mason. In recent years, many stakeholders in Bristol Bay's massive commercial salmon fishery have been stressing the importance of improving the quality of the total salmon pack out of the bay. Most stakeholders agree that one of the best ways to increase quality is to chill more fish at the point of harvest. Last year was the first year in history that over half of the Bristol Bay salmon pack was chilled at the point of harvest. The percentage was 52%. Last year, the Drift Fleet chilled 59% of their catch at the point of harvest. That was up from the 53% that was chilled in 2011. The Drifters account for nearly 95% of the chilled product in Bristol Bay, and 80% of that chilled product was done so using refrigerated seawater systems. The largest supplier of RSW systems in Bristol Bay is Integrated Marine Systems, and sales engineer Doug Short notes that the company's been working with fishermen in the bay since the early 90s. He confirms that there's been a tremendous increase in interest in using RSW systems in Bristol Bay.
I'd say it's, you know, probably tenfold in the last 4 to 5 years. The support, you know, for refrigeration, not just the systems, has increased. It definitely needs, we need more support people down the road, but I'd say it's tenfold at least.
Last year, the Drifters chilled 64.8 million pounds of raw product. 51.6 million pounds was chilled using RSW systems. The rest of the chilled product, 13.2 million pounds, was chilled using slush ice systems. One of the men at the forefront of the RSW industry in Bristol Bay is Pete Regan. He's the owner and the operator of Stay Cool Refrigeration in Naknek and Anchorage. He's been installing and servicing RSW systems in the bay since 1992. He started his own business in 1993. Regan believes there were less than 30 RSW systems in use in the 1980s, but he says once the 90s rolled around, more and more fishermen started to get interested in using RSW. However, he says the infrastructure was not yet widely available to take advantage of the improved quality that an RSW system could provide.
You have a refrigerated boat, and you go deliver to a tender that's not refrigerated, you know, and then you get your bonus, but what good does it do? Because you're delivering to a non-refrigerated boat, you know. So that was a little bit strange. So the bay had to come around quite a ways to get, you know, as functional as it is. You know, it was a big-time cannery market back then, you know. And then when all the farm fish started taking a hold and taking more, they had to take a different approach, you know, up here as far as how they're going to market their stuff. So they went after the wild salmon market instead of just the canning, you know. So then they finally got Leader Creek started up, and you know, and you get these fresh fillets and pin boned and all that stuff. And, you know, the products start going, you know, and then they wanted quality.
Now in Bristol Bay, we have tenders that use RSW systems to chill the fish they receive from fishermen, and there are a handful of processors that stress the importance to their fleets of chilling fish at the point of harvest. Silver Bay Seafoods, which plans to enter the Bristol Bay market next year, plans to only buy fish chilled down using RSW or ice, and Leader Creek Seafoods' drift fleet is almost exclusively an RSW fleet. IMS's Doug Short claims one of the biggest challenges to using RSW systems in Bristol Bay is the lack of trained people to install and service the systems, which is why the company is supporting efforts to get more fishermen comfortable maintaining their own systems.
We do training classes with Sea Grant, and so we've been trying to do our part in the off-season, you know, on maintenance and upkeep and how to use them and, you know, just different ways you can go about refrigerating, but with Bristol Bay in particular, there seems, you know, everything happens so quickly, it's hard for the different refrigeration companies that are up there to staff up for that short season. I don't think that we can expect more service guys up there. I think we need to do more training so that they can keep these things running and really realize the potential out of them.
There are only a small handful of companies that service the Bristol Bay fleet, and most of them just operate in the bay seasonally. Stay Cool's Pete Regan admits that it's challenging to do business in the Bay.
It's difficult. Let me tell you, it's the hardest thing to find is somebody that I spent, you know, years by myself, but then when I hired a guy, you know, train him, spend all summer working him and training him, they don't show up next year, you know. The end of the season happens and they're off, you know. They're getting people to come back every year. I got lucky, but it's taken a long time to find these people, you know.
Regan's advice for fishermen is to take the time to make sure that the RSW system they have is shut down properly at the end of the fishing season.
That and maintaining them, you know. You have to maintain things, you know, mechanical equipment, you know. You have to clean it up. I mean, it's in a wet area. You know, it just that moisture just eats them up. So to spray them down corrosion block and, you know, take precautions to where they're not going to be big rust bucket when you come back.
There are a number of different RSW systems available that can serve different types of vessels, but for the most part, they're not cheap. A brand new standard 7-ton hydraulic system installed and ready to go can run upwards of $40,000 to $50,000. IMS's Doug Short says everything can be done in the bay without having to take your vessel south, but he stresses that fishermen need to plan ahead.
You know, if it's planned and they do it before the season or after the season, it could be fairly economical. What drives the cost up is everybody shows up once, you know, they have a certain amount of time, plus they have to go fishing, and that starts to drive the cost up a little bit. So, you know, I think the infrastructure's there. It just, you know, it has to be more scheduled, and people have to be willing to work more with these vendors like Stay Cool, and, you know, there's Luma Fabrication, there's Foamer guys, but so that, you know, it has to be spread out more, because I don't think there's room for more vendors, because you can't make it pay in that 3 to 4 week season. And so in order to, you know, keep the guys that we have, spreading it out over a longer period of time drives costs down.
It's unclear if fishermen this year can match last year, when over half of the total salmon pack was chilled at the point of harvest. Many stakeholders have told KDLG News they never thought they would see a majority of the catch being chilled by fishermen. Doug Short has been involved in the RSW business for nearly 30 years, and he says it eventually had to happen.
I've always thought that was the way we had to go with global competition and people's palates changing and how their buying patterns. I always thought it was possible. I'm surprised it actually took as long as it did.
You can find out more about the increase in chilling at the point of harvest in Bristol Bay in the 2012 Bristol Bay Processor Survey that was released earlier this year. The survey was conducted by Northern Economics for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. The 2012 survey can be found online at bbrsda.com. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report here on KDLG. We'll be right back. tuned to the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The sockeye escapement counts in the Nooshigak District took another large jump upwards Friday as the midpoints on all three rivers are in sight. Another 39.7 thousand sockeye were counted in the Wood River Friday. The count through 6 a.m. this morning was 3,780. That pushes total escapement to the Wood River to just over 1 million fish. The escapement goal is between 700,000 to 1.5 million. The midpoint is 1.1 million. Sockeye escapement to the Nooshigak River Friday was counted at 33.5 thousand fish. That puts total escapement to over 819,000. The upper end of the escapement goal is 840. Another 29,000 sockeye were counted Friday to the Agushik River. The count through 6 o'clock this morning was 2.3 thousand. That pushes the season total to 256.5 thousand sockeye. The upper end of the escapement goal is 300,000 fish. Once the midpoint on the Wood River is achieved, Fish and Game can waive the transfer requirement into the Nooshigak District. Once that is done, fishermen can transfer into the district without having to sit out the usual 48 hours. The other large counting operation in the Nooshigak District is to count kings returning to the Nooshigak River. Another 2.2 thousand kings were counted Friday to push the season total to 82.8 thousand. That's still short of the new escapement goal of 95 thousand fish. Currently, the commercial fishery in the Nooshigak District is open until further notice, 24 hours a day for both the drifters and the set netters. However, catches have been very light in recent days. ADF&G area management biologist Tim Sands says things appear to be winding down quickly.
We caught 97,000 fish yesterday. It's probably slower today. There's always a chance of a little push coming through, but it's definitely on the tail end, and we're hopeful that we can scratch out another few hundred thousand fish, get over three million catch, but it's coming in right close to forecast. It's kind of, it came in earlier and maybe a little bit faster than expected, but it came in kind of at the same level as expected, and, you know, it's just what it is.
Friday's sockeye harvest in the Nooshigak District was less than 100,000 sockeye to push the season total up to 2.7 million. To the west in the Togiak District, things are just starting to pick up with 24,000 sockeye taken on Friday to push the season total up to 90.7 thousand fish. Counting towers on the Togiak River started counting July 3rd. Friday, another 4.1 thousand sockeye were counted to push the total to 14.8 thousand. And the escapement goal for the Togiak River is 150,000 sockeye. As of 9 a.m. this morning, there were 269 drift vessels registered to fish in the Nooshigak District. There were 58 in the Togiak District. The vessel count in the Nooshigak District is expected to increase up to 278 in 48 hours. And the latest permit values report from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission shows some changes in the Bristol Bay and Alaska Peninsula fisheries. CFEC puts the value of a Bristol Bay drift net permit at $94.9 thousand, which is up $800 from the value recorded back in May. In the last 12 months, there have been some significant swings in permit values. For instance, in July of last year, a Bristol Bay drift net permit was valued at $114.6 thousand. However, that value dropped each month until December when the value was estimated at $87.4 thousand. Since then, the value has increased each month, with the current value estimated at $94.9 thousand. Changes in the value of Bristol Bay set net permits has been much less dramatic. Currently, set net permits are valued at about $41.1 thousand. In the last 12 months, highest set net value on record was the $42.5 thousand in September of last year. Lowest value on record in the last 12 months was the $40.1 thousand recorded in July of last year. The June monthly permit values report from CFEC shows some significant changes in the permit values in some of the other salmon fisheries in Alaska. For instance, an Alaska Peninsula purse seine permit is now valued at about $66.9 thousand. That's up from the $58.9 thousand estimated value recorded in July of last year. The value of a Chignik purse seine permit is estimated at $155 thousand. That's up from the estimated value of $97.6 thousand recorded back in March. Alaska Peninsula drift net permits are currently valued at about $84.7 thousand. That is way down from the estimated value of $127.8 thousand recorded back in September of last year. Alaska Peninsula set net permits haven't changed very much in the last 12 months. Current value is estimated at $56.3 thousand. That is up slightly from the estimated value of $55 thousand recorded back in April. And that concludes today's edition of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. The report can be found online at kdlg.org. And if you have something to add to our program, please send me an email to mike@kdlg.org. Please join me Saturday afternoon at 4, rather Sunday afternoon at 4, for the next Bristol Bay Fisheries Report right here on KDLG. Until then, please be safe, watch the weather, and tune in tomorrow.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA. We are on board with you.